Today I'm meeting two more entrepreneurs from the Block Dojo program, the incubator for startups which are building on the BSV blockchain. Just before the founders went on stage in front of investors, I heard about two businesses which combine commercial ambition with a social justice purpose in the areas of mobile money in Africa and participation in democracy.
You're listening to CoinGeek Conversations with Charles Miller.
Africa is big. It's got many things going for it. But many of you did not know or do not know that it is fintech ground zero. It's the fastest growing and biggest fintech market in the world.
First up is Lionel Bernard, whose WeliPay aims to provide mobile money in Africa, starting in his native Liberia.
Because there are over 800 million unbanked. Two-thirds of Africa don't have a bank account. Also, two-thirds do have a smartphone. And that's why they're tapping into mobile financial services.
So, Lion, I want to find out about WeliPay, but perhaps a word about the name to start with, because that's quite interesting.
Thank you, Charles. The word Wli is a tribal word and is used by certain tribes on the west coast of Africa. And the word literally means money amongst those tribes. It's a common word shared across several tribes in that part of the world, in West Africa.
But it works rather nicely as will he pay as well, doesn't it?
Exactly. some have a hard time pronouncing it. And the simple way to pronounce it is by saying those three words really rapidly.
Will he pay?
Will he pay? Will he pay?
Okay, great.
That's how you say it.
So now what is it? What exactly is the service you're providing?
Well, the word Wli means money, and we're in the money business. We're providing mobile payment services that target the unbanked across Africa.
Right. And so how is it going to work?
Well, the way it works is that if you're an unbanked, and that means someone who doesn't have access to banking services or financial services within their community, they can set up an account with us using their smartphone. You download the app, you open an account, you go through our KYC process. And within 5 minutes, you have a WeliPay account.
Why would that person not be able to open a bank account then?
Well, there are several reasons, Charles. One is the ratio of banks to people is very low across most of Africa. So banks are only in urban areas, and there are only few of them. And they typically target high-end customers. So if you're a rural resident living in a village, or you're even an urban resident, the typical per capita income in that part of the world is around 100, 200, say, pounds per month. So banks are not interested in those kinds of deposits or microtransactions, which are typical of the average person.
Right. So you couldn't just download a banking app and do the KYC and open up a bank account in the same sort of way.
No, you couldn't.
Right.
In most places.
So somebody then has downloaded the app. How would they be using it?
Well, there are several transactions that we facilitate. One is peer-to-peer payments. So if you want to send money to a relative or a friend that has our wallet as well, you can do that using our platform.
Well, so how do they actually get their money into their account on the platform?
We have arrangements with agents, and these are independent contractors that are all over our market area. And what they do is our customers can come up to them and do various transactions, so top up.
Would the customer typically be bringing cash to the agent?
That is correct. The customer will give the agent cash, and the agent would transfer the exact amount of cash that was given to them into the customer's wallet from their wallet.
I see. Right. So these agents they're just individuals. They're not sort of sitting in a big office or anything.
Yes. A lot of them are right on the street. They have their operations on the corner. And they make money off of certain transactions like cash out. So the reverse is if one of our customers goes to these agents and says, I have 100 pounds in my wallet and I want to get cash for it, say a withdrawal, similar to what you would do at the bank, the agent would give them 100 pounds in cash, and the agent would transfer 102 pounds from their wallet to the agent's wallet using a QR code or the agent's phone number. And the extra two pounds is our transaction fee. And the agent keeps £1 of that, and we keep £1
of
that.
So it's 1% each then?
Yes, right. 2% each. And we have a 50-50 commission split with the agent. So whatever transaction fees we charge that the agent facilitates, they get half of that transaction fee, right. And we keep half.
And so what currencies do you envisage that people would want to put onto WillyPay?
Well, every country has its own regulations. Most countries, their mobile payment sector is regulated by the central bank. So the Ghana central bank, the Nigeria central bank. We're operating in Liberia initially, and we plan to expand in places like Sierra Leone, Guinea, and Ivory Coast. So every country has its own regulations, and the regulator will require that your mobile payment has two wallets in it or one. So for example, in Liberia, the regulator requires that every single account that's open immediately should have two wallets, one in US dollars and one in the local Liberian dollars. In places like Guinea, where they use a CFA, which is a French, Francophone French standard currency, they only require one wallet, which is CFA. In Sierra Leone, they only require one wallet as well.
So if I go to the agent with my $10 or whatever in local currency, then I need to specify whether I want it, what currency I want it to be put into WillyPay. Is that right?
Yes, exactly. By regulation, both wallets have to be kept separate, both fiat wallets as well as crypto wallet.
Right. So you're going to include BSV as well, I think.
Yes, absolutely. We're rolling out a BSV wallet initially, and that has to be kept separate too. And that wallet allows the customer to top up their wallet using the token or address and exchange it with an agent or even buy things using their BSV wallet separately. So when you're buying something, you have to select which wallet you're going to take it from.
So if you were talking to a potential customer who doesn't have a bank account, what kind of things would you be saying they'll be able to do that they can't do at the moment?
We're several things we're aiming for as far as resolving some of the problems that exist with mobile payments, mobile banking. One is transaction fees. Our fees are way lower than competitors. In some cases, our competitors are charging 20% in transaction fee. As you saw earlier, we're charging between 2 and 5%. The other thing is we're providing better customer service, which is something you can't get with others. The other thing that we're providing is a crypto wallet, as I mentioned.
Yeah.
We're the first to introduce crypto wallets, specifically in Liberia at this point. Another feature that we're aiming for aggressively is the acceptance of our wallet by small vendors. So these are street vendors, and it involves micropayments, sometimes in less than 20 pounds or even 10 pounds. And right now, the customers have to take cash and then pay for things because these merchants don't accept mobile payments. So we're going to be working with different associations like the market, people that sell goods in the market association, taxi drivers. We're working with taxi drivers to accept our payment using QR code. Street vendors, we're working with them to accept our QR code as form of payment.
Now, so these are things. I know that your background is perhaps not what one might expect from somebody who's getting into this business, which is that you have been working for the government in Washington, various official offices and so on in Washington, senior positions. How did you get, and I also see that you have written some novels about Liberia, set in Liberia. How did this all come about from your life in Washington?
Well, good question, Charles. Well, I was born in Liberia. I left there at the age of 15 to go to college in the U.S., specifically in Michigan. I got an undergraduate degree in computer science at a university there in Michigan. And then I moved back to Washington, D.C. to go to graduate school at Howard University, where I got an MBA. And then I got my doctorate degree at Maryland. So that's what brought me from Liberia to the U.S. and then end up...
Now you're going back again.
Yes, now I'm going back. Liberia, I've got some deep connections there. My father still lives there.
Right.
I still have a home there, half my family there. Now I'm starting a business there. But as far as my career, most of my career I've spent in the technology space as a software engineer, as a cybersecurity engineer. I've filled a lot of roles, and more recently, as an executive with several federal government agencies, including the Congress, U.S. Congress there, and some other private agencies based in Washington, D.C.
And do you see this as a straightforward business as an entrepreneur, or is there a sort of social purpose behind it that is motivating you to start WillyPay?
It's both. The entrepreneur in me is eager to leverage this opportunity because I see the problems that exist, and I believe that WillyPay can provide a better service to the unbanked in that part of the world. The social impact component of all this is that the problems are very realistic. A lot of unbanked folks that live in rural areas, especially, simply don't have any alternative. You know, they're being taken advantage of in terms of pricing, in terms of quality of service, in terms of just the lack of, better financial services that allows them to transact across borders. So my goal is, not only to set this up as a viable business, but also to improve the lives of, to bring financial services, quality financial services to the market, and also, address the problem of financial inclusion, where those who are outside of the banking sector, they can't get a loan, they can't get insurance, they can't transact across borders. If they have a small business and they need to buy supplies from other neighboring countries, which is done manually now. So that's the social impact component of all of this, of WillyPay.
Well, I wish you every luck with it, and I hope it's a huge success. So thank you very much for talking to me, Lionel.
Thank you, Charles. Appreciate it.
I was personally affected by many things that my government did wrong. And I am somewhere in this photo in 2020 back at home protesting because of that.
Next, Arthur Woodsick introduces his Repolify, which is designed to help citizens engage in the democratic process.
Only 35% of citizens feel they can actually influence politics. The political process is complex and difficult to follow. It is time to change this.
So Arthur, what is Repolify?
Repolify is a blockchain-based platform to engage citizens in the political process. So it is designed to revitalize democracy and provide people with updates on political process or political decisions on national and local level, and give them a tool to understand more what's going on, see through the complexity and feedback that process.
And why does it need to be on the blockchain?
The very important part of this platform is actually communication. So communication between those who make political decisions and citizens. And in order to facilitate that, we will provide a tool to feedback everything you see, any political decision, any bill, any politician, assess their performance. And therefore, we will sort of implement blockchain technology in order for that feedback to stay immutable and to stay immune to any sort of manipulation and have that permanent register of public opinion protected by blockchain.
So if I download the app, the Repolify app, as just an ordinary user, somebody who might be interested, what sort of activities would I be offered or how could I get involved?
So first of all, you will be invited to go through a robust personalization process because we do recognize not all people just are interested in general political.
So I say what issues I'm interested
in. Yes, what issues you will be able to choose, say environment, social welfare, taxation, maybe something that's applicable to your personal or professional life or business. And then you will see updates. If you, for example, you've chosen something more general, you will just see the latest bills introduced regarding that matter, and you will be able to interact with it.
Right. So you're talking about bills in the sense of things that parliaments are going to be considering. Is that right? So this is really a legal thing where we're studying lawmaking and legislation in process.
Yes. But importantly, it's not just the boring text of the bill that has been introduced or a statute that has been passed. Will be on a national level for every bill. We will summarize that document. It's sometimes, you know, 50 or 100 pages. We'll use AI to summarize and visualize that document, and every user will be able to see the whole document. But what you usually interact with is just a summary and sort of visualization of the data regarding the area of regulation. And that's the national level. On a local level, you will see things posted by councils. So community engagement officer or community engagement counselor responsible for residents' happiness, things like that. And you will be able to participate in public consultations and participatory budgeting, feedback, any new projects, things like that. And importantly, on the national and local level as well, you will see the list of who's in charge. So politicians, right. What they do, how they vote.
So where will you be rolling this out to start with then?
In the United Kingdom first. And then we're planning 2 years to scale to the United States as well.
Right. And so you will need a staff of people who are going to be not exactly journalists, but information gatherers who will be putting all this stuff online for your users to access. Is that right?
No, that's actually the point where it becomes interesting. So for the national level, we use open API of a parliamentary database. And the process of downloading information on new bills, old bills, basically, and all the MPs is automated. It is real time. The moment a new bill is introduced in the parliament, it will be presented on our platform. And for local level, it is councils who update, who post things there. So, you know, answering your questions, yes, we will have to have journalists and policy professionals to supervise and oversee the quality of content and kind of the level of engagement, make sure this thing really works and provides value, but it is rather automated.
And so what problem, or how would you characterize the problem that this is going to solve or help with in terms of participation in the political process?
Well, the problem is actually here is multidimensional, but what we're trying to achieve is bring more simplicity and more understanding, more awareness into what's going on. So many people wouldn't be able to read through the 50 pages, but they can use our platform when it's launched to you know, see the updates on things that are relevant for them and see the summary, see the visualization of data.
Because you are worried that there's not enough participation in the democratic political process. Is that the root of all this?
Yes, absolutely. There is no enough participation, and it's again a two-sided problem. So there is not enough awareness and understanding, and there is the communication is not efficient between two sides, so the society and government, and because of the lack of awareness and understanding, there is the level of participation is relatively low. And another problem that we want to address actually by not making content manually, not inviting journalists to produce that content, but doing it automatically, is that we try as much as possible to fight against bias. So what happens will be presented. It is automated. There is a new bill. It's a legal fact. It is transferred to our platform. And whoever finds something like that interesting will be able to see it.
Your background is as a lawyer in Poland. How did the politics of your own country inform your interest in this subject?
That was one of the main reasons, I would say, why I decided to do something like that. So speaking openly, I wasn't always satisfied, or lately I wasn't satisfied with a couple of key decisions that were made. So I tried to participate sort of in many, you know, having this more like a direct democracy approach, going even protesting against something I was radically against. But I think if society had been given this type of a tool, we wouldn't have had this level of problems, I think, because what happened was actually something I assess as a lawyer or as a citizen, even as negative.
Are you able to tell me what the issue was?
Yeah. So yeah, in general, I can tell you that there were a couple of changes into human rights law, right, in general, that had very tangible consequences. It wasn't something that abstract, but had very tangible consequences that my friends, me, I wouldn't say personally, but it was affecting our lives. And I was strongly against it. But I saw also the majority in society, there was support for something I think didn't, you know, that's my political opinion. So yeah, this is something, maybe it's difficult for me to, you know, to say that objectively, the thing I believed in is the ultimate truth. It's not for me to decide, for sure. But what I believe would be a better way to deal with that problem that had to be regulated in some way was to, for the government to be more aware of the needs and wants of the society, and for the society to be more aware of what is actually being regulated and in what way.
Right. But so why are you opening in the UK and then the United States, but not in Poland?
Well, there are a couple of reasons. First, personally, I came here 3 years ago to study at University College London. So I kind of stayed here. And then when this idea came to me, I right away applied for to participate in a hatchery incubation program at University College London. So it's open for students and I got in. So I kind of stayed. But secondly, I think this nation, and this country and the business environment is something that is like facilitating this whole process. And it helps us networking the opportunities with incubators and accelerators to try to you know, face all those immense challenges and the skepticism and try to make sure and prove that it's actually, it can be done. And this environment really, really, really helps with that. And what I plan to do is to, now here have to like introduce the app, let's call it a proof of concept, and make it work, make sure it also has a proper monetization strategy and revenue streams are healthy, and then I will scale it to many other countries, including back at home.
Well, really good luck with it, and thank you so much for talking to me today.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks very much to Arthur Woodsick and Lionel Bernard. There'll be more entrepreneurs from the dojo next week when I'll be finding out about how blockchain can revolutionize the way publishers find new writing talent and how fans will be able to create their own sports leagues. So please join me, Charles Miller, next week for another CoinGeek Conversation.